Welcome to the podcast Social Work Successes, which aims to shine a big spotlight on the brilliant work that social work professionals do with children and families every day, because this is just not celebrated enough. Practitioners will be sharing their stories, which will hopefully not only inspire others, but also provide some helpful learning in relation to factors that may have contributed to that success. You guys deserve far more recognition than this podcast can give, but thank you for listening and everything you do for the families you work with. Welcome to the podcast, Social Work Successes. It's lovely to have you, Jo. I guess it's helpful just to start with a bit of an intro about yourself, maybe any like previous roles you've done and your current role in practice.
So I'm Jo and I work in, it's a mother and baby assessment unit. So mums come with us generally with babies. Sometimes we have toddlers, but they come for a 12-week assessment. And I'm a family support worker. So I work with families like day in, day out, recording on our logs, and then they go to the lead social workers who then at the end of their assessment make a decision or a recommendation whether the family stay together or they get separated.
So thinking about the family that we're going to talk about today, could you just give kind of a brief overview, I guess, of what kind of brought them to come for a residential assessment, maybe what maybe some of their struggles or difficulties were at the start of that?
Yeah, so I was a key worker to this family, and the main thing was like heavy drug use with both parents. So we can get placements where there is mum and dad or just mum, but it was mum and dad both coming with baby. So it was heavy drug use. It was mum's second baby, but the dad's first. But mum also had low, like cognitive understanding, low IQ, and lots of worries around neglect and stuff like that.
Okay. And how open were they? I guess if they were both in placement, how open were they both to working with you?
So they was both very open. Mum was very open. It wasn't that she didn't want to work with us, because she knew that she had to be there to take the baby home. So, you know, she wanted to do everything that she could, but I think it was the low IQ and stuff that had its struggles there.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, that can be one of the first hurdles for you guys, can't it? Whether someone is in what I term kind of a place of acceptance or denial. And if they come to you and they're already in that place of accepting the fact that this intervention is actually needed and required, and they want to make those steps to kind of make it work with you, that's a really good starting point. Obviously, if a parent comes to you, I'm sure you've worked with these ones as well, in a place of denial, that doesn't mean the whole thing is doomed for failure. It's just a little bit more challenging then, isn't it, to just kind of get below the surface and build that trust and those kind of working relationships. Okay, so I guess what part of this parent's story in working with you guys would you consider to have been a success for her?
So when you start to work with a family, you sort of get an idea of what way it's going. And the way that we do it, so it's a 12-week assessment, and when they first come to us, they're on full supervision. So you literally, it's eyes on baby. So every time that you're there, you have to see the baby. So if the baby's like in the bedroom sleeping, you've got the monitor on, but it's also like supervising them, make the bottles, you know, all of that sort of thing. And generally they stay on full supervision, then they have a review at 3 to 4 weeks when, if everything's going well, their supervision levels drop. And then they have another one at 9 to 10 weeks where the supervision levels will drop again. And I just remember, so I was working with the family and I just thought, there's no way she could take this baby home because she would forget to feed him, forget to change his nappy. You would ask her, when did you last do a care task? And she just couldn't tell you. She'd be like, I don't know, I can't remember. And we kept trying to think of things of like how to help her remember. So we say to a lot of our parents, we'll write it down, like in a book. If you've got a notebook, write down your tasks, or there's all the apps you can get on your phones, do something like that. But she didn't really use her phone a lot. And she said if she wrote it in a book, there was nothing to remind her to look in that book. So she would just forget to look in the book. But when I was doing like the key working sessions with her, it become quite apparent that she was a really like a visual learner. So where we've watched some videos, you would know what she remembered because she would say, oh, you know, like when this happened, and he's now doing this because of this, which is what was shown in like we do lots of baby brain development videos and stuff like that. So we decided to get a chalkboard, which stayed on the side, and she would write her times on that. So then where it was in front of her all the time, she would then think, right, so she knew when the next bottle was due, because like as we were saying to her, it's not just, so we recommend feeding babies like 3 to 4 hourly. But obviously it's the preparing the bottle and all, you know, all stuff like that that takes the time. So to work out
I'm
when
still
to
in
do
it, Joe. I'm still in the preparing bottles
that.
phase. But yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think when we find out what sort of like a learner they are and how it's overcoming them battles, isn't it? Because if you can't overcome that, then you're never going to be able to do it, sort of thing. So we got her a blackboard, and it was sort of from then things started to progress. Because I remember, so she was probably on full supervision until about week 9 or something like that, and that's really quite unusual.
And I guess just thinking about that in itself must be so, I can understand obviously why you have to do it, but it's so intense. And I used to work in, I've also worked in a mother and baby residential placement. And I, when I had my ba both of my babies, there were times where I was like, God, I would just really struggle with somebody watching me that intensely, like it's just like it's obviously necessary, but it's just such an intense thing to have happen. And I guess for her, getting to week 9 and she's still being in that place of being watched, the intensity is very much there, and also probably kind of slightly affecting her internal working model of herself, feeling like she's doing well and doing and is good enough, because obviously the two things are sort of interlinked, isn't it? If she doesn't believe she is, she's probably going to be struggling more, but that idea needs to be there. So I know where you guys work, and I know you're very kind of strength based. So I imagine in amongst that you're still on full supervision at 9 weeks, you were very much trying to build her up to focusing on the and as this is a success story, you
And
obviously
then
did
it was
manage
her
it.
confidence as well. So because she got to that time when we suddenly said, right, you know, you're having some unsupervised time. She was then really like not doubting herself, but she was like, oh, so there's not going to be anybody here watching me. We was like, no, but you know, that's a good thing. Like, you've got to realize that that is, you know, a good thing.
The other thing I was thinking as you were speaking was about this idea of it's an interesting situation when you're working with a parent who has learning difficulties as well as maybe struggling to mentalize, because when the two things are at play, you really have to work out, don't you, what how do we work with each of those separately, because they're not kind of necessarily causing the same thing, in a sense that you ultimately what you want to her to be able to do is, rather than having to log and read and be so acutely aware kind of from a factual perspective about when her baby needs to be fed, It's about her being able to read her baby telling her. You know, her baby is the
Yes, yeah.
ultimate source, isn't it, of teacher to her, and
Yeah.
being able to read those signals and pick up on those cues. You know, was that something that you did alongside the other work with her?
Yeah. And that really helped, like being able to mentalize for the baby was such a big thing, because you could say to her, like sort of safety things. So if you said, like if they're bathing the baby, don't turn your back because the baby could drown, she would obviously, she knew what you were saying. But she would be like, okay, but if you actually use the baby's name and said, he could, this could happen, it was like that went in more. So it was sort of trying to help her think of it from the baby's point of view, not just why we're saying these things, like, and I've always said, we don't have a rule just for a reason. So I think it's obviously good to explain why that certain thing is in place, but it definitely helped her saying it from, like, using her baby, like even using just the name, put it into more real life rather than just saying this could happen or that could happen.
And also, I guess it feels, if you can do it from almost like the voice of the baby, the perspective of the baby, it feels like that's what he's expressing is his need, rather than you saying you need to be doing this differently because of such and such.
Exactly, yeah.
So yeah, okay. So going back then, so we get to week 9, and this mum's on full supervision, but obviously something then changes.
Yeah.
So what I guess, yeah, what how did that kind of unfold and
So we all
rest there?
started to obviously to see a change in her. She was, instead of us prompting her to do things, she was saying, right, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And we sort of said to her, you have to think of it as though we're not, even though we are in the room with you, as though we're not in the room with you. So don't wait for us to say, oh, you're going to make the bottle or you're going to put the kettle on. You tell us what you're going to do. And she did. It was as though she just took real, like, ownership of it. And she was like, right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Obviously, yeah, got to week, I think, I'm sure it was about week 9, and then the supervision dropped, and she, but then she started to panic, and it was like, oh, but there's going to be no one here. And then we had to obviously reassure her and say, but for the last, 2 weeks or so, we haven't been prompting you, so you have been doing it. And then it's building that confidence to say, but you're going to be doing nothing different to what you have already been doing. We're just not going to be here with you, sort of thing. And then because she wouldn't, and then she got, so to start off with, obviously we go out with them in the community and stuff like that. She then got some like free time in the community with him unsupervised, but then didn't want to use that because she was too nervous to go out because it had been something that she'd never done before. So when the baby come to us, he was originally in like temporary foster for was about maybe a month. So it was something that she had never done before, because previously they was obviously only seeing them in a contact center, to them being with him full time but on full supervision. And then suddenly we were saying, oh, you can go out now. And we was obviously trying to encourage her to go out because it's all good, for their assessment to show that they can do it. But she sort of had this, not a barrier, but she was obviously nervous about going out. So we said, oh, walk to the shop, like we'll wait at the end of the road while you walk to the shop. And you had to really build it slowly,
And
to
I
get her
guess kind
used
of
to going out.
metaphorically hold her hand through it and be then offering her that praise and acknowledgement that and letting her know that she can do it. Because yeah, it's
Yeah.
almost like you have to undo, don't you, what she's probably internalized up until that point. Okay. So yeah, so I guess it got to the end of that placement and things had been going well for her and baby.
Yes. So it got to, they say it's a 12-week assessment, but generally they're with us a little bit longer because, like the lead assessor needs to write up the final report and stuff like that. So then she went on to a mother and baby foster placement, And we've just recently heard that they're transitioning back into the community, so they're going back home. So,
Brilliant. Another big step for her, I guess.
And she said, because we always say to our parents, like, keep in touch, because generally we don't hear anything once they leave us. But she's come back and she said, without yous, like, I would not be where I am now. And it just makes you realize that, the work that we are doing is like for a good, what is
Life-changing
considered for a good cause.
on
But you
both
know.
fronts. Yeah, life-changing for mum, certainly life-changing for baby, like completely different outcome had that not worked as well as it did. I mean, it just sounds like you were able to really kind of build that supportive relationship with her, and she was open from the beginning to being able to lend itself to that, which yeah, is great. So I guess, well, what would you say was one of the biggest challenges of working with this particular mum?
I think, like, you could say something over and over, and it would become not, I suppose, like a little bit frustrating, because you think, just said this, but it just never seemed to go in. And then it's like one day everything sort of clicks. But I always found with her, like, when we would do key working, so if we had a video to watch, she would be like, that was amazing. And she would pick things out that she heard from the video. And even like a few weeks down the line, she would be saying that, and she'd say, oh, like, he's obviously learned to do this now, so that's because he's, the way his brain's working and all his like motor neurons are connecting and stuff like that. And you'd know that it was from that video. But you could say something over and over, and or you could say to her the next day, well, do you remember we spoke about this? And she'd go, no. And you'd think, oh God, like, we just said it yesterday, and we said it,
Yeah.
days and days. But
So
I
I
think
guess
it
that
was
maybe
more.
brought up some kind of sense of frustration in you guys, because you were probably then worrying like how was it going to progress for her if that was what the
And I think
situation
the
was.
biggest thing was probably learning what type of learner she was as such. So she definitely benefited from videos, pictures, stuff like that. And
Did she do any of
the
the video intervention, the video-based intervention?
yes.
She did.
Yeah, so we do that where we are. So they, I think we do about five of them. So they do like a feeding, a play session, a bath, and then obviously watching it back. And I think seeing, because that's a good way to see it from the baby's point of view as well, where you see
Very
their
powerful, yeah.
reactions.
I've actually trained those people, Joe. So I was just checking. I wasn't sure whether it's something that is given to every family, but yeah, brilliant. Okay. And also that can be a really great tool when you have got a parent with learning. I mean, it's a great tool anyway, but especially when you've got a parent with learning needs, because it sounds like that helped to really tap into her style. So I guess the question about what were the three biggest contributing factors, we've got that one, which was certainly you guys tapping into thinking about how she was going to learn best, and you were almost forced into that, I guess, because things weren't progressing, and that frustration was there with her
I think
holding
like
it for a second mum.
mentalization as well, helping her like think what the baby could be thinking. Because I remember when she come to us, as say, she was like a heavy drug user, and she'd be very open, to the point where she said, the night before she had, because she had a planned C-section, the night before that, she took a lot of crack cocaine, which stopped the epidural working. But the way she was saying it was not, she wasn't boasting, but it was quite off the cusp. She was like, even though this baby was still in her belly, she was taking all this crack cocaine. And then
And had she
towards the,
taken that, do you think, like for the sense of like having a good time, or was it linked to her feelings around the C-section? I mean, it's quite an
no,
extreme thing to do, isn't it?
she took it all throughout the pregnancy,
Okay.
and it was, so we deal a lot with like Forward Trust as well, and she did go there to groups and stuff. So it was an addiction, but the way she was saying it was very, she wasn't like obviously when she was taking it, she wasn't thinking of what it could be doing to the baby. It was
No.
just her taking it. And towards the end of placement, she said, "I can't believe it. Like I was basically forcing drugs down his throat." And you know, then you could see like how much she'd learned, like while she was with us, you could see how much she had transformed, because she then sort of, I suppose you could say, like felt guilty about it, because she'd finally like at the time she didn't realize the effect that was having on the baby. But
Or
towards the
even
end
if
of
she did, I get,
placement,
even if she did, because somebody might have said, like, until she, it sounds like until she had that attunement and that connection, which seemed to grow in placement by various different methods and things that you guys were doing, that until that was there, then that wasn't necessarily possible. The other thing that just came to mind for me was I said at the beginning about that distinction between learning need and mentalization struggles and difficulties, because it is actually a myth that just because someone's got learning needs, they're going to struggle to mentalize, because you can have, an Oxford graduating barrister who does not mentalize well for people.
yeah.
And you could have a parent with learning needs that can, and their difficulties manifest in other ways, more kind of practical task-based ways, than thinking about it in a different way. But yeah, okay. So we've got the one success being the tuning in to her learning style. I think that's relevant to all practitioners, really, in working with families, whether it's in a residential setting or not,
Yeah.
working out how they learn best and take on that information, because you're often giving them quite a lot of it. Second, I guess it sounds like that piece of mentalization intervention, getting her to connect with what baby's thinking and feeling, and that seemed to grow that sense of attunement. Have you got another one? I mean, those two are pretty good as it stands in terms of things that
Well, I
contributed to it
think even
working.
just being patient, you know, even though you was repeating yourself a lot, knowing that it will sink in, you know, so like being re like repeating yourself, but being patient. But then I suppose that is something that we do with, you know, all families that we're working with. Yeah, sort of expecting a lot of repetition. But then I would always, like when we was doing key working and stuff like that, at the end, not just say like, "Is that okay?" Because she could just say, "Yeah, you know, you don't know how much has gone in." But I would always say, "So what did you take from that?" You know, so then you can actually see like how much goes in, because it's easy for someone to just sit there and say, "Yeah, that's fine," but if they've not taken it in, then it's not going to help them.
Yeah. And I guess how you deliver that's quite important, isn't it? So it doesn't feel like you're just testing them and this whole
Exactly, or
thing is
sounding
really.
patronizing and stuff like that. You don't want to be like, "Oh, you know, do you understand?"
No,
sort of thing.
yeah. How you get that right? Well, clearly you did get it right, because you managed to have that relationship with her. Okay, lastly then, what would you say is the thing that you love most about this role that you're currently doing?
I just think, so every day is different, you know. But I think knowing that we're having such a massive impact on someone's life, that, you know, and even when we do have families that end in separations, we've had the mum come back and say, "Thank you for all your help," because now, you know, they see a different sort of outlook and all that. So I think knowing that you're helping someone for the best, you know, you're giving this baby the best opportunity at life, really. Yeah, and we do something. So at the end of our daily assessments, we've got a little box it says like child summary of the day. So obviously, like when the child then reaches 18, they can get all their files, and our DAs can be really, really long, so you probably wouldn't want to sit there and read through every single one, but it's just a summary of the day. But we sort of write to the child, so we say, like what's happened in that day, and I think that's really nice, because even if it's not been a great day, you can write, They need to know what's happened if it is separation, and obviously when they get to 18 they want to know. It would then show them why that happened. So I think that's quite a good thing that we do, sort of writing to the child.
And I guess have knowing that that intention was off, was there with, with most parents, I imagine it is that this isn't something that that they have actually tried their best to hear, I think, for anyone later down the line when it hasn't worked out. Brilliant. Thanks, Joe. Thank you for listening. This podcast is really in its infancy phase, so please do like, share, subscribe, tell your colleagues, tell your managers, tell anyone else that you think might benefit. Thank you.